and he signaled Stilgar that the audience was at an end. To Stilgar's questioning gesture, asking if Edric were to be assassinated, Paul gave a negative hand sign, amplified it with an imperative lest Stilgar take matters into his own hands. Skytail, Edric's aide, moved to the rear corner of the tank, nudged it toward the door. When he came opposite Paul, he stopped, turned that laughing gaze on Paul, said,
"If my lord permits?"
"Yes, what is it?" Paul asked, noting how Stilgar moved close in answer to the implied menace from this man.
"Some say," Skytail said, "that people cling to Imperial leadership because space is infinite. They feel lonely without a unifying symbol. For a lonely people, the Emperor is a definite place. They can turn toward him and say, 'See, there he is. He makes us one.' Perhaps religion serves the same purpose, my lord."
Skytail nodded pleasantly, gave Edric's tank another nudge. They moved out of the salon, Edric supine in his tank, eyes closed. The steersman appeared spent, all his nervous energies exhausted. Paul stared after the shambling figure of Skytail, wondering at the man's words. A peculiar fellow, that Skytail, he thought. While he was speaking, he had radiated a feeling of many people, as though his entire genetic inheritance lay exposed on his skin.
"That was odd," Stilgar said, speaking to no one in particular.
Paul arose from the divan as a guard closed the door behind Edric and the escort.
"Odd," Stilgar repeated.
A vein throbbed at his temple. Paul dimmed the salon's lights, moved to a window which opened onto an angled cliff of his keep. Lights glittered far below. Pygmy movement. A work gang moved down there, bringing giant plasmel blocks to repair a facade of Alia's temple, which had been damaged by a freak twisting of a sandblast wind.
"That was a foolish thing, Usul, inviting that creature into these chambers," Stilgar said.
Usul, Paul thought. My siege name. Stilgar reminds me that he ruled over me once, that he saved me from the desert.
"Why did you do it?"
Stilgar asked, speaking from close behind Paul.
"Data," Paul said. "I need more data." "Is it not dangerous to try meeting this threat only as a Mentat?"
That was perceptive, Paul thought. Mentat computation remained finite. You couldn't say something boundless within the boundaries of any language. Mentat abilities had their uses, though. He said as much now, daring Stilgar to refute his argument.
"There's always something outside," Stilgar said. "Some things best kept outside."
"Or inside," Paul said, and he accepted for a moment his own oracular Mentat summation. Outside, yes, and inside, here lay the true horror. How could he protect himself from himself? They certainly were setting him up to destroy himself, but this was a position hemmed in by even more terrifying possibilities. His reverie was broken by the sound of rapid footsteps. The figure of Korba the Kizara surged through the doorway, backlighted by the brilliant illumination in the hallways. He entered as though hurled by an unseen force, and came to an almost immediate halt when he encountered the salon's gloom. His hands appeared to be full of sugar wire reels. They glittered in the light from the hall, strange little round jewels that were extinguished as a guardsman's hand came into view, closed the door.
"Is that you, my lord?"
Korba asked, peering into the shadows.
"What is it?" Stilgar asked.
"Stilgar?"
"We're both here. What is it?"
"I'm disturbed by this reception for the guildsmen."
"Disturbed?" Paul asked.
"The people say, my lord, that you honor our enemies."
"Is that all?" Paul said. "Are those the reels I asked you to bring earlier?"
He indicated the sugar wire orbs in Korba's hands.
"Reels? Oh, yes, my lord. These are the histories. Will you view them here?"
"I viewed them. I want them for Stilgar here."
"For me?"
Stilgar asked. He felt resentment grow at what he interpreted as caprice on Paul's part. Histories. Stilgar had sought out Paul earlier to discuss the logistics computations for the Zabulon conquest. The guild ambassador's presence had intervened. And now, Korba with histories.
"How much history do you know?"
Paul mused aloud, studying the shadowy figure beside him.
"My lord, I can name every world our people touched in their migrations. I know the reaches of Imperial, the Golden Age of Earth. Have you ever studied that?"
"Earth? Golden Age?"
Stilgar was irritated and puzzled. Why would Paul wish to discuss myths from the dawn of time? Stilgar's mind still felt crammed with Zabulon data, computations from the staff Mentats. 205 attack frigates with 30 legions, support battalions, pacification cadres, Kizerat missionaries, the food requirements, he had the figures right here in his mind, and mélange, weaponry, uniforms, medals, urns for the ashes of the dead, the number of specialists, men to produce raw materials of propaganda, clerks, accountants, spies, and spies upon the spies.
I brought the pulse synchronizer attachment also, my lord,
Korba ventured. He obviously sensed the tensions building between Paul and Stilgar, and was disturbed by them. Stilgar shook his head from side to side.
Pulse synchronizer?
Why would Paul wish him to use a mnemonic flutter system on a Shigawire projector? Why scan for specific data and histories? This was Mentat work. As usual, Stilgar found he couldn't escape a deep suspicion at the thought of using a projector and attachments. The thing always immersed him in disturbing sensations, an overwhelming shower of data which his mind sorted out later, surprising him with information he had not known he possessed.
"Sire, I came with the Zabulon computations," Stilgar said.
"Dehydrate the Zabulon computations,"
Paul snapped, using the obscene Fremen term which meant that here was moisture no man could demean himself by touching.
"M'lord!"
"Stilgar," Paul said, "you urgently need a sense of balance, which can come only from an understanding of long-term effects. What little information we have about the old times, the pittance of data which the Butlerians left us, Korba has brought it for you. Start with the Genghis Khan."
"Genghis Khan? Was he of the Sardaukar, my lord?"
"Oh, long before that. He killed, perhaps, 4 million.
He must have had formidable weaponry to kill that many, sire. Laser beams, perhaps, or
he didn't kill them himself, still. He killed the way I kill, by sending out his legions. There's another emperor I want you to note in passing, a Hitler. He killed more than 6 million. Pretty good for those days."
"Killed by his legions?" Stilgar asked.
"Yes."
"Not very impressive statistics, my lord."
"Very good, still." Paul glanced at the reels in Korba's hands. Korba stood with them as though he wished he could drop them and flee.
"Statistics. At a conservative estimate, I've killed 61 billion, sterilized 90 planets, completely demoralized 500 others. I've wiped out the followers of 40 religions which had existed since..."
"Unbelievers!"
Korba protested.
"Unbelievers all!"
"No," Paul said. "Believers."
"My liege makes a joke,"
Korba said, voice trembling.
"The jihad has brought 10,000 worlds into the shining light of..."
"Into the darkness," Paul said. "We'll be 100 generations recovering from Muad'Dib's jihad. I find it hard to imagine that anyone will ever surpass this." A barking laugh erupted from his throat.
"What amuses Muad'Dib?" Stilgar asked.
"I am not amused. I merely had a sudden vision of the Emperor Hitler asking something similar."
"No doubt he did."
"No other ruler ever had your powers,"
Korba argued.
"Who would dare challenge you? Your legions control the known universe and all that..."
"The legions control," Paul said. "I wonder if they know this."
"You control your legions, sire,"
Stilgar interrupted, and it was obvious from the tone of his voice that he suddenly felt his own position in that chain of command, his own hand guiding all that power. Having set Stilgar's thoughts in motion along the track he wanted, Paul turned his full attention to Korba, said,
"Put the reels here on the divan."
As Korba obeyed, Paul said, "How goes the reception, Korba? Does my sister have everything well in hand?"
"Yes, my lord."
Korba's tone was wary.
"And Chani watches from the spy hole. She suspects there may be Sardaukar in the guild entourage."
"No doubt she's correct," Paul said. "The jackals gather."
"Banerjee," Stilgar said, naming the chief of Paul's security detail, "was worried earlier that some of them might try to penetrate the private areas of the keep."
"Have they?"
"Not yet."
"But there was some confusion in the formal gardens,"
Korba said.
"What sort of confusion?" Stilgar demanded.
Paul nodded.
"Strangers coming and going,"
Korba said.
"Trampling the plants, whispered conversations. I heard reports of some disturbing remarks."
"Such as?" Paul asked.
"Is this the way our taxes are spent? I'm told the ambassador himself asked that question."
"I don't find that surprising," Paul said. "Were there many strangers in the gardens?"
"Dozens, my lord."
"Banerjee stationed picked troopers at the vulnerable doors, my lord,"
Stilgar said. He turned as he spoke, allowing the salon's single remaining light to illuminate half his face. The peculiar lighting, the face, all touched a note of memory in Paul's mind. Something from the desert. Paul didn't bother bringing it to full recall, his attention being focused on how Stilgar had pulled back mentally. The Fremen had a tight-skinned forehead which mirrored almost every thought flickering across his mind. He was suspicious now, profoundly suspicious of his Emperor's odd behavior.
"I don't like the intrusion into the gardens," Paul said. "Courtesy to guests is one thing, and the formal necessities of greeting an envoy, but this—"
"I'll see to removing them," Corba said. "Immediately."
"Wait,"
Paul ordered as Corba started to turn. In the abrupt stillness of the moment, Stilgar edged himself into a position where he could study Paul's face. It was deftly done. Paul admired the way of it, an achievement devoid of any forwardness. It was a Fremen thing, slyness touched by respect for another's privacy, a movement of necessity.
"What time is it?" Paul asked.
"Almost midnight, sire," Corba said.
"Corba, I think you may be my finest creation," Paul said.
"Sire!"
There was injury in Corba's voice.
"Do you feel awe of me?" Paul asked.
"You are Paul Muad'Dib, who was Usul in our siege," Corba said. "You know my devotion to—"
"Have you ever felt like an apostle?" Paul asked.
Corba obviously misunderstood the words, but correctly interpreted the tone.
"My emperor knows I have a clean conscience."
"Shai Hulud, save us," Paul murmured.
The questioning silence of the moment was broken by the sound of someone whistling as he walked down the outer hall. The whistling was stilled by a guardsman's barked command as it came opposite the door.
"Corba, I think you may survive all this," Paul said,
and he read the growing light of understanding on Stilgar's face.
"The strangers in the gardens, sire?" Stilgar asked.
"Ah, yes," Paul said. "Have Banerjee put them out still. Corba will assist."
"Me, sire?"
Corba betrayed deep disquiet. "Some of my friends have forgotten they once were Fremen," Paul said, speaking to Corba, but designing his words for Stilgar.
"You will mark down the ones Chani identifies as Sardaukar, and you will have them killed. Do it yourself. I want it done quietly and without undue disturbance. We must keep in mind that there's more to religion and government than approving treaties and sermons."
"I obey the orders of Muad'Dib," Corba whispered.
"The Zabulon computations?" Stilgar asked.
"Tomorrow," Paul said, "and when the strangers are removed from the gardens, announce that the reception is ended. The party's over still."
"I understand, my lord."
"I'm sure you do," Paul said.
"Here lies a toppled god. His fall was not a small one. We did but build his pedestal, a narrow and a tall one."
Tleilaxu Epigram. Alia crouched, resting elbows on knees, chin on fists, stared at the body on the dune. A few bones and some tattered flesh that once had been a young woman. The hands, the head, most of the upper torso were gone, eaten by the Coriolis wind. The sand all around bore the tracks of her brother's medics and questers. They were gone now, all excepting the mortuary attendants who stood to one side with Hate, the Gola, waiting for her to finish her mysterious perusal of what had been written here. A wheat-colored sky enfolded the scene in the glaucous light common to mid-afternoon for these latitudes. The body had been discovered several hours earlier by a low-flying courier whose instruments had detected a faint water trace where none should be. His call had brought the experts, and they had learned what? That this had been a woman of about 20 years, Fremen, addicted to Samuda, and she had died here in the crucible of the desert